traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit energycitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
You're listening to the Oil and Gas This Week podcast with Mark LaCour and Paige Wilson. This is the show for busy oil pros who quickly want to keep their finger on the pulse of the industry.
You're listening to the Oil and Gas This Week podcast brought to you by API. This is a show for busy oil pros who want to quickly keep their finger on the pulse of the industry. Thanks for joining us for episode 338. And we are recording live at our booth at the Carbon Capture Utilization and Storage Conference.
So CCUS.
Yep.
CCUS to you too. And before we get into all the stuff we need to get into, a couple of quick things. Number one, if you're joining us for our Houston Mixer, the end of this month, which was the 28th, Thursday the 28th, that date has been moved to the 27th. So if you join us for a Houston Mixer on Thursday the 28th, we had to move it back one day to the 27th. If for some reason you can't make it, just go to your Eventbrite ticket, click refund, and we'll happily issue you a refund. However, if you haven't signed up yet and you'd like to join us and support a great cause and have some fun and hang out with your oil and gas peers, your OGGN team, go sign up. There'll be a link in the show notes. Our industry mixers are always super well received. It'll be the Wednesday, the 27th of March. If you come, come find me. I'll probably be in jeans and a black shirt.
And you'll probably have a Whataburger cup.
Quit telling my secrets to everybody.
It's true.
Or maybe
Starbucks cup.
Or maybe get Whataburger to sponsor us. Oil and Gas This Week sponsored by API and Whataburger. That'd be great. Everybody outside of Texas going, what is a Whataburger?
No, that's not it anymore.
Have they expanded outside of Texas?
Somebody bought them in Chicago,
that's right.
A couple years ago.
Yeah, but did they expand?
Probably. I don't know. I'm not sure.
Anyway.
this is not really what that show's about.
This is Oil and Gas This Week / foodie news. We actually have a fun little thing here. So if you've listened to us for a while, you know that several times we've asked you to answer the one question survey. It's in the show notes. And if you do, we'll send you a laptop, a hard hat sticker. And I got a picture sitting here from guess who?
Ludwig. It's always Ludwig.
Ludwig got his OGGN stickers, hard hat stickers, and laptop stickers mailed to him by Gabe. Thanks, Gabe, on the OGGN team for taking care of that. So these stickers are now global. They've been all over the world because Ludwig's in the Netherlands. Ludwig, if you notice on the back of your envelope, it says take a picture, post it on social, and tag us, and you get a chance to win something. So if everybody else has got a sticker, if you didn't notice that on the back of the envelope, if you got a sticker, take a picture of it, tag us on LinkedIn, Instagram, Twitter, wherever, and we'll throw you into a raffle to win some cool stuff, including, I think, $100 merch certificate.
All
you gotta
do
is take a pic and tag us.
There's a bunch here on the table. I might just have to
do it yourself. You're not qualified. You can't win the merch.
I know.
You want to hit up the review?
Yeah, sure. 5-star review. Great show to be in the know about oil and gas. I've been listening long before the current host, Paige. Yes, host, people, not co-host. And this podcast
She's never going to forget that.
I hold grudges. And this podcast is consistently a great source for up-to-date oil and gas news with some opinion sprinkled in for good measure. The first Friday Q&A episodes are great, but be aware this week may not always mean weekly shows. Despite this and the co-host Mark's questionable transitions.
Hey. Hey, people like my segues. 3 of them.
I mean, keep telling yourself. It's 5-star for anyone in the industry or just looking to learn more while keeping up to date with our industry from Mo 1245 here in the United States.
Mo, thank you for the fantastic review. If you'd like to be like Mo, just go in the show notes and click the link, leave us a review, and we'll give you a big shout out on the air. Let's get into the news story, shall we?
All right. Well, first up, we have UK extends windfall tax on oil profits by a year to 2029.
So, you know, I didn't like it when they did this.
Yeah, I know. That's why I put it in here.
There's no windfall credit for the decade that we lost billions of dollars. Actually, In 2015, this industry lost more money in 1 year than all the profits they made in the last 3 years. Nobody talks about that. However, they implement the windfall tax. Now, unfortunately, it's politics as usual.
Right.
So they're extending the windfall tax, although we're no longer in the record profit space that we were in Page. When you take the windfall tax that they've imposed, which is 25%, and you add it to the normal taxes that you pay in Europe, do you want to guess what the total tax rate is in the oil and gas sector?
I don't know, but I feel like it's California style.
It's worse, if you can imagine being worse in California. It is 75%.
What?
75%. So 75 cents of every dollar the oil and gas sector makes in the UK goes to the government.
Wow.
Let me tell you what that's doing, UK people. It's doing two things. The industry is rapidly stopping investment in the UK oil sector because it's just too much money going to the government. I mean, really, the government's not drilling. The government's not taking risks. The government's not finding crews. The government's not renting drill ships. The government's not feeding people. And yet the government's taking 75% of the profits. That is ridiculous. So with this lack of investment, you can see—
I feel like that should be illegal.
It should be. It literally should be, but it's not. So this lack of investment in the North Sea specifically means in about 2 years, Europe, your energy prices are going to double. Not go up 50%. They're going to go up 100%. Okay? It is.
So what's the point? Like, why would you?
And all the companies that operate that part of the world are going to operate another part of the world where they can make decent profits. This does not help the oil and gas industry, obviously. You know what else it hurts? The renewable industry. Right? You want to know what the renewable industry needs to build offshore wind farms? They need equipment. They need ROVs. They need cranes. They need project managers.
Things that cost money.
And none of those are going to be there anymore.
Right.
So Europe, if you don't get your stuff straight with this windfall tax fantasy of your government, you're going to drive up the cost of energy for all of your people, for your citizens. And all it's going to hurt is the taxpayers. This utterly is shooting yourself in the foot. 75% tax rate, final adjusted tax rate in the oil and gas sector. That should be criminal to Paige's point.
Yeah.
And you know what? I'm going to leave it there. Let's go to the next one.
All right. Anyway, Iran to unload 50 million worth of crude oil from tankers seized in 2023.
This is tit for tat because we seize one of their tankers. We offload it in Texas. This is exactly what's going on. You know, this tanker was hijacked in the Gulf of Oman in January. It was seized by Iran. Retribution to the U.S. seizure of Iranian oil last year on that other tanker. I would tell you the names, but they keep changing the names. They keep changing the flags the tankers are flying over because of sanctions. So I quite honestly don't know what the name of these two tankers are. Iran tanker and U.S. tanker. Although the U.S. tanker belonged to Iran and Iran tanker belonged to the U.S. Go figure that one out. And all joking aside, this type of seizure of commodities that is worth this amount of money that also supplies energy to the world has an endpoint. And that endpoint is going to be all-out war. This needs to stop. $50 million for the crude oil that Iran seized in last year in 2023 is starting something in that area of the world that doesn't need to be started. So I don't even know where to go with this other than the U.S. Navy is there. Let's hope that the U.S. Navy keeps any type of seizures of vessels from happening again. Let's also hope that the U.S., while we're entering this election cycle, comes up with some very solid rules on what is considered seizable and what is not. And let's also make sure that when we have tankers out there that are intentionally flying the wrong flags or the wrong transponders, that the world's governments don't respond and buy that black market oil. We need to stop this sort of stuff. This is adding powder to a part of the world that does not need any more aggression or reasons to be aggressive.
Right. Yeah. All right. Next up, we've got India shies away from the contracted Russian oil supply amid stricter U.S. sanctions.
All right. So, you know, I give our government heck when they do something they shouldn't do.
Right.
I also give them props they do something they should do. I'm going to tell you right now, this is pretty smart of our U.S. Treasury and State Department. So what's happened, what's been happening is we have sanctions, us in Europe, actually our allies have sanctions since the Ukraine invasion against Russian oil, not 100% barring them from selling, but basically preventing them from selling a large amount and setting the price you can buy it. Of course, Russia doesn't like that because it prevents them from powering their war machine and funding their economy, which is the whole point of this. And there's some countries out there that aren't following the sanctions that are buying the Russian oil in the open market, China and India specifically. So the U.S. State Department looked at this and they go, how do we get India to quit buying Russian oil? It's not helping us with our sanctions. We've asked India not to do it and they ignored us. We've made the oil sanctioned, so it's illegal. They're still doing it. So you know what they're doing now? they're going to sanction the tankers that move the oil. So India, you're still welcome to buy the Russian oil. How you're going to get it across the ocean without a tanker?
Oh, no, they're just going to switch flags.
No. I don't think you understand. So what they're doing is they've targeted 500 ships that could carry crude to India. And they're saying, these 500 ships, I don't care what flag you're flying. I don't care what transponder you're
saying.
We're watching you. And if you pick up a load of Russian crude, we are not going to let you deliver it to India. And India, you're paying for that tanker, whether it gets delivered or not. India is under financial threat of paying for tanker crude and never getting their crude. This is genius. So no soldiers involved, no shots fired, no politicians hollering each other. This is the U.S. State Department going, hey, India, especially their large refineries, we're not going to let these tankers enter your waters if they have Russian crude. I think it's a great solution. Hopefully, not only does this work, but hopefully we do something similar in China, which is another story.
It's a whole different story. All right, next up, we have vessel sinks in Red Sea after missile strike.
So I read this three times, and I did some research.
Yeah?
Something's going on, and I need one of my Ardnitz buddy in the armed forces to help me understand. So, you know what's been going on? There's been a bunch of drone attacks. It's a very easy thing to understand.
Right.
Think of a big version of the same drone your kid's flying. Think about putting something explosive on it. Think about flying it to ship and blowing it up, right? We all understand how that works. The ballistic missiles aren't made to attack ships. They're made to literally go straight up from a country, go out into outer space, travel around the Earth in outer space where you can't shoot them down, and then come straight down to the target where it makes it very hard to shoot down because it's going so fast and it spent so much time in space, right? It's a very smart weapon that is designed to hit stationary targets, cities, buildings, that sort of stuff. What's happened is they've taken these same ballistic missiles and they've targeted ships. You heard me talk about this before. They've had zero luck with it because the guidance electronics, the technology is old on these missiles. The missiles themselves are fine. They can do the job. They can hit the ship. They can't guide it to the ship. And I was hoping that the Chinese never give them better technology, which so far they haven't. Well, something's happened where now these ballistic missiles have actually impacted three separate ships in the Gulf. And these were Iranian-backed Houthi terrorists that are firing these ballistic missiles from Yemen into the Red Sea. Now, of those three missiles they fired, one of them missed everything, just hit the water. One of them hit a cargo vessel, and it did zero damage, and the vessel just kept on going. The last one, actually, it sunk the vessel. My two questions are, the ballistic missile that hit the vessel did no damage. Does that mean the ordnance never went off? That's what I think happened. I don't know. I'm not an ordnance specialist. So if somebody's listening that could answer that, how did a ballistic missile hit a cargo ship and do zero damage where the ship was able to continue under steam to the port? Now, unfortunately, the other ship, it did massive damage. There was a fire. The crew tried to put the fire out. They couldn't. And the vessel eventually sank. I believe there was only one person that lost their life. There were several industry injuries. So the loss of life was very minimal. However, this is stepping things up in the Red Sea where these ballistic missiles actually sunk a ship. And they did this while the U.S. Navy and our allies' Navy are there to protect the ships. I would like somebody that understands this better than me to explain to me, what are the implications of this? Because to me, it's two things. One is somebody in the bad guys to figure out how to hit ships with a weapon that's not designed to hit ships. The second thing is our armed forces were unable to prevent it from happening. What's going on? I don't know the answer to this, but this is absolutely an escalation of warfare in the Red Sea, which is the wrong way this thing needs to go.
Yeah, there's enough going on as
well.
This,
let me tell you, if the same group of people, same Houthi rebels, are able to target a military vessel, whether it's ours or somebody else, it's going to be all hell that breaks loose if they end up hitting one of our military vessels. I don't want that to happen. If anybody can help me understand what's really going on there, I appreciate you reaching out to me directly. We will absolutely keep an eye on this.
Okie doke. TC Energy sells PNGTS to BlackRock for $1.14 billion.
Could buy a lot of Whataburgers for that.
$1.14 billion. And for once, it's not me.
So let me tell you what I think is really going on. So this sounds like the typical large pipeline company buying infrastructure from a smaller pipeline company, but it didn't make fiscal sense to me. Like the deal doesn't make any sense until I looked at geographically, where is this infrastructure? So this infrastructure is on the Upper East Coast. You know why I think this sale went through?
Why?
I think the original owners, TC Energy, that owned this Upper East Coast gas pipeline infrastructure, are worried about politics and regulations shutting down the transport of natural gas,
in
which case
that.
Their investment becomes worthless. And so if you think that's going to happen, what do? You sell it to somebody else.
Well, BlackRock's
and get out
pretty
from
big
under
organization.
Yeah, right, exactly where it's going next. And people, we don't rehearse this. If that is true, what government organization could help you keep your pipeline infrastructure being used? None of them.
Right.
What private organization is big enough that has enough money and a political pull to make sure it doesn't
and
happen?
And money behind a bunch of other stuff.
BlackRock, right? So if I'm right about this, this is a strategic move of the decade by TC Energy. Like I said, the deal finances...
Well, TC Energy is pretty smart.
They're a good group of people. So. It could be just a normal pipeline deal. You know, like I said, my predictions for last year, the pipeline infrastructure in the U.S. and around the world is going to explode in growth. This could be part of that. But the finance of the deal, when I dug into it, doesn't make sense. I think this is something bigger. And I actually think that TC Energy was worried about losing the value of their assets and sold it to somebody that
has Mark, enough. If you think about it, we're coming up on an elections.
Yeah.
So who knows what the government would try to do just for votes.
Yeah. So long story short, if I'm right about this, this is TC Energy. Hats off to you for being that shrewd.
Good call. All right. China barred from buying USA oil reserves and funding bill.
So you know how important our strategic petroleum reserve is. You know how I feel about it. You know how I feel about our government using it to gain votes, to try to lower the price of the pump, which is asinine. This is there in case something really bad happens so we can run our country and our military. You know, I've talked about the numbers before, but one of the things that doesn't bother me is who buys the oil. It doesn't matter to me that China buys. It doesn't matter who buys it, right? When it's sold, it's sold in a bidding process. If the Chinese don't buy it and somebody else buys it, Chinese just buy oil somewhere else. This doesn't really help China other than they get oil cheaper than they can get it themselves, but somebody was going to buy it. So I actually could care less who buy it, even though I'm not a big fan of the Chinese. However, one of the things that's in this article that I don't like is they talk about how our current administration has been working frantically to refill the strategic petroleum reserve and has purchased an amazing 23 million barrels since last year. People, do you know how long 23 million barrels would run this country? 2.3 days. 2.3 days. So our current administration, which is frantically trying to protect our strategic petroleum reserve and all their wisdom and money and work in the last year, has given us not even 3 days extra.
Oh, thanks.
2.3 days.
Thanks, guys.
That is ridiculous. Regardless who wins, regardless who's in power, this needs to be high priority. We have the money.
Top priority.
We have the oil under our own feet.
I know.
Right? Fill this strategic petroleum reserve back up as fast as humanly possible. It's important. End of story. Next one. Punch the body. Podcast host gets in jail for punching the leader of the strategic petroleum reserve. Who's an 85-year-old paraplegic. I would never punch a paraplegic.
I don't know. You're on one today, bud. All right.
Because I'm hungry because there's no Whataburgers here.
I guess that's better. I guess this is better than a segue. Chevron invests in quantum computing development for oil and gas market.
So, you may not remember. You know quantum computing.
Yeah, I went to the IBM
thing. We went to IBM Think thing. Remember when we interviewed from Marketing Over Coffee? I was
And you were all like,
Sean Penn.
Yeah.
Sean Penn took pictures,
You were pretty starstruck.
I was. I'm still starstruck with him. I love that. I still listen to that podcast. And if you want a really good marketing podcast to listen to that's based upon data and science, go listen to Marketing Over Coffee. It's fantastic. I've been listening to it for years. Anyway, so what is Chevron doing? Chevron's going, hey, Exxon, while you're taking me to court over Guyana and basically cleaning my clock, we're going to put money in quantum computing. Why? So that we can do subsurface geoscience better than anybody. This is freaking genius. This is Chevron Technology Ventures, which is their venture group inside of Chevron Corporation. Invest the money. They're going to use it for subsea. Well, it would be subsea if it was subsurface and subocean, but they're going to use this for geophysical evaluation of reserves. This is going to be a game changer if they get this thing up and commercialized. Paige and I have seen quantum computing. Even though I can explain it to you how it works, it's still like something
out of Harry Potter.
It's basically, if you understand computers, you understand binary language, everything's on or off or one or zeros is how computers work. And by doing enough of that, you can make it do all kinds of cool stuff like turn your coffee pot on or run an Excel spreadsheet. Quantum computing is both one and zero at the same time. Figure that one out. So this is awesome. I'm glad Chevron Tech Ventures is doing this. I think this is a groundbreaking opportunity for the geosciences and for the oil and gas industry as a whole. Once they get this thing up and running, there's all kinds of other applications for quantum computing, especially on the downstream side. So I just love the fact they're doing this. It will be interesting to see what the costs are once they start trying to commercialize this. The cost will be high. So in the beginning, it won't make fiscal sense to use quantum computing to do geoscience. But at some point, that cost will come down and Chevron's going to be leading in the market because they did this first. So good job, Chevron.
Yay. Okie doke. OnBridge to invest $500 million in pipeline assets.
Guess what they're doing? Guess what part of the country they're doing this in?
Our country. That's all I got. Well,
if I say what part of our country and you say our country, you have to be right.
I mean, yeah.
They're doing our backyard in the Gulf Coast.
Oh, really?
They're not doing it in the Upper East Coast where people are selling their pipeline assets. So basically, Enbridge is taking, not, I wouldn't even say a gamble. They're taking a slight risk that I'm absolutely sure will pay off for them in increasing their ability to export products, whether that's liquefied natural gas, gas, refined products, crude oil, whatever, right here in the Gulf Coast. So they're basically buying a competitor that's physically right next to them. This will give them, let's see, another, I think, 800,000 barrels a day in capacity to export. They're also buying three natural gas utility companies, which is an interesting play right now. That tells me they think the future of electrical generation is still nat gas powered, which I would agree with them. Now, while they're doing all this, Paige, they're doing layoffs. Ooh. So they had a workforce reduction of 650 jobs, which is about 5% of their total workforce. This tells me they're trying to get their balance sheet in line.
Yeah,
not sure why. They're doing pretty good if you look at what's going on with them financially. For some reason, they're trying to do better. I don't know why yet, but there's a reason for this. So we will keep an eye on this somewhere down the road. I suspect I'm going to come back and tell you, here's why they did a workforce reduction of 650 people while they're investing $200 million in additional infrastructure.
Okay. More productive will spur U.S. crude oil production higher.
So normally I do a deep dive in this and explain everything. Whoever wrote this title deserves a raise at BIC Magazine. It's basically we're having wells that are more productive, so we're increasing production. It's pretty simple as that. So we're having more production numbers in the U.S., not from necessarily more wells, but the same existing wells are being much more productive.
Pretty redundant title.
It's an excellent title. You need to read the article. The decline curves from the shale plays has been extended out dramatically. What used to be that, say, the first 12 months, you'd have a dramatic drop-off in production. Now it's being extended. This is just showing that we're getting smarter as an industry in the unconventionals on land. This is what we want to do. This is driving efficiencies. This is driving better health, safety, and environmental metrics. This is better for the environment. Just basically being more efficient in the wells that we're drilling and the production we get from those wells. Love this sort of stuff. I expect this trend to continue the next 100 years.
Good. That's always good. Unnamed Reuters source say Aramco, ADNOC, and U.S. LNG talks.
So another person that should get a free lunch for writing the perfect title.
Whataburger?
Or whatever, yeah.
Whataburger
so,
lunch.
Let me tell you what's going on here. Basically, you know how our present administration has decided to put a pause on permitting LNG plants in the U.S.?
Mm-hmm.
Which means that people are not wanting to invest.
Right.
I don't blame them. I would not invest money in an LNG plant right now during our current administration because you don't know if you get that money back.
Right.
So Aramco and ADNOC said, you know what, U.S., if you're not going to invest money in your own LNG plants, we will.
Yeah.
They see the future of LNG, something that ExxonMobil saw over 15, 20 years ago when Rex Tillerson was CEO. I believe LNG is the fuel of the future. We've all seen the fact that renewables have not lived up to their promise. The world needs more energy every day. Liquefied natural gas or LNG is the solution and the only solution right now. And so what's happening is in the U.S. right now, investments are kind of on pause because our federal government has decided to pause the permitting of new LNG plants. So we're having companies from outside the U.S. saying, you know what? If you can't find investment money in your country, we will give you investment money because we see the promise in LNG. First thing, I'm actually glad this has happened. I want to see these LNG plants continue to be built and grown. Not only is it jobs and tax money for the U.S., but it's feeding energy to a world that needs energy. We're still in an energy shortage from the right after the pandemic, right from 2021. However, I would rather see American companies invest in American assets.
Right.
However, if they're not, I'm totally fine with foreign companies investing in American assets. A lot of people will say, well, now you're giving control to foreigners. number one, we're all foreigners. Go back two or three generations in your own family.
No kidding. You weren't
born here, right? But the second thing is this business is truly global. If investment money can't come from here, it's okay for it to come somewhere else. They don't control the facilities. They've just invested in the facilities because they want a return. Right here in our backyard, Paige, Shell sold its Deer Park refinery to Pemex. It's still the same refinery, still with the same people, with the same jobs, still paying taxes. Pemex hasn't taken over Houston, you know? So like I said, I'd rather see American investment dollars flow into LNG, but if not, other companies around the world who see the promise are investing. And I think this is a good thing. Let's keep it up.
Yep. Okay. Saudi's complete transfer of 8% in Aramco to the Sovereign Wealth Fund.
So once again, a great title. Basically, two government-owned entities has traded money. Now, the transfer to the public investment fund, which is basically a savings account for Saudi Arabia, just like Norway has its own sovereign investment fund, basically a savings account. This 8% stake is worth a little bit over $163 billion, that's with a B, dollars. And that's a big hunk of money. Now, one of the interesting things is when all this happened a few years ago, and there was talk about the IPO and everybody going public, I thought there was to be a pretty significant investment in Aramco. And there was from a dollar point of view. But when you go back and look at the percentage, all of that investment dollars from individuals and companies outside of the kingdom is less than 2% of the shares. The kingdom still owns right at about 98.2%. So they still own it. They're just basically moving money from one company to the other. Now, this will double the kingdom's stake in Aramco, the oil company. And what they're going to do with this money, if you don't know anything about the Crown Prince, he has a program trying to attract other businesses to that part of the world, to his country, that's not oil and gas based. I think it's called the Vision Program. And what he's trying to do is build projects to attract things like tourism. We've all seen on news the really cool Shell Islands they built,
all the shopping,
the largest indoor ski lift in the world. I like that idea. I like the idea of them trying to diversify their economy, even though most of their money comes from hydrocarbons. So it's going to be interesting to see where this goes. That's a lot of money to be able to spend on stuff like that. I really like the Crown Prince. I mean, I haven't met him yet, but I really like what he's doing with his country. I support him 100%. I think this is the right thing to do. It is funny that with all the fuss and everything, they still own over 98% of their own oil company.
Okie doke. Up next, we have Germany extends Rosneft trusteeship, avoiding nationalization.
So when Russia invaded Ukraine, Russia owned a refinery in Germany. Germany said, guess what, Russia? We are just taking this darn thing over. You don't own it anymore, which is the right thing for the Germans to do during that time. And what they're doing is they keep wanting to give it back, or they keep saying they would give it back to Russia. But Russia's still in a war with Ukraine.
Right.
So they're basically extending the trusteeship. At some point, they will give it back, and then Russia will just go ahead and sell it, probably for pennies on the dollar. By the time that happens, Russia's broke already, but the time that happens, Russia's going to be really broken. They're going to need the money.
Mm-hmm.
And this is going to keep a refinery up and running in Germany who needs refined goods, I mean, like in a really, really bad way. So this is just kind of business as usual. Good thing that the Russian government decided not to give it back, to keep the trusteeship. I don't want to see that refinery go nationalized. But at some point, like I said, once things settle down, once Russia and Ukraine come to whatever peace the Russia and Ukraine are going to have, Germany will let this thing go back and then it'll be sold. And just like we talk about the Shell Deer Park refinery, it's going to be the same guys and men and women working the same refinery, paying local taxes. It'll just be owned by a German company instead of a Russian company.
Sounds good to me. Okay, last one. BP prepares to drill in Brazil where other majors have failed to find oil.
BP, I love you. I really do. I don't know if this is a good idea. And like I said, I love you. You've kind of had a string of things that didn't work out well for you.
Yeah.
I hope this one breaks the string. I hope y'all strike oil. I hope it's economically viable.
Good vibes.
Yeah. I'm sending you love and, you know, unicorn, whatever you need to do to find oil here. But there's been a lot of companies that are bigger than UBP that have tried to find oil in these same blocks, deep salt layers in Brazil, the pre-salt regions. BP contracted a drill ship. They bought whatever equivalent of leases they needed to buy. I think that drill ship's going for about $500,000 a day. And they're going to drill in a place that basically nobody else has been able to find oil, including my favorite, Exxon. So fingers crossed, UBP. I hope you kill it there. I have a feeling that in 6 months, 8 months or so, we're going to be having the same discussion. And I'm just going to be shaking my head going, BP, I try to warn you, but sincerely, I hope y'all strike oil. I really do. I hope y'all kill it there. Nobody else has.
Yep.
You know, I do want to go back a little bit. That Rosneft refinery that we talked about, that the extended trusteeship, it does about 512, I think, tons of crude oil a day, which sounds like a lot, right?
Yeah.
If we take the Port Arthur refinery, it's right here in Texas. It's like 3 million. I'm just trying to give you a sense of the size of difference in the output of refineries that meets European needs versus what it meets American needs. We're not even the same universe.
Right.
But I'm really glad that they're actually doing that. I don't want to see that refinery fall back under Russian control until Russia and Ukraine get their stuff settled, which I suspect will happen the middle of next year. I should put that in my predictions.
You should.
Once our election cycle goes through, I think we'll have a new administration in place. I think that new administration...
Isn't there supposed to be an election in Russia?
Yes.
And I say election like...
Okay, are we doing behind the curtain now?
No, we're not. No, no.
Anyway, let's stop right there because we're getting behind the curtain stuff. And we're at a conference. So real quick, if you want to sign up for our two newsletters... Oh, I got a great story to tell you, Paige. Both links in the show notes. You have our Oil and Gas Events newsletter. And you have our Sunday Update newsletter, which has cool stuff, behind-the-scenes stuff at OGGN, recipes. It's a great way if you're a small company to reach our oil and gas audience for just a few hundred dollars a month. And one of the things that we do, unlike other people who put jobs in there, we don't want to do that. So we actually find people that are looking for a job and put them in the newsletter so we can actually help an individual out, not help a company. And what happens is if you know of anybody that's looking for a job, send them our way. We vet them. And if we think they're good, we'll put them in the Sunday Update for free saying, hey, I'm so-and-so looking for this type of job. Well, we had nobody to put in this past Sunday's update. So
you just put me in there.
So
no, not really.
OGGN has a security team led by Tucker. You've heard us talk about Tucker before.
What? We talked about my dog?
OGGN has a security team led by Tucker.
He runs our
You've heard him on the show before. So we just, and Tucker is actually a certified emotional support dog.
Oh my God.
Right? So
not by my choice.
We decided to put Tucker in the Sunday update as a joke for saying that he was looking for a job. Might be kind of funny. However, our new Sunday update person, Gabe, who has a heart of gold, he's great, is new to the company and didn't understand. So if you received our Sunday update, what you saw is a picture of our dog who is loved and well protected and fed and cuddled. He has 10 beds.
He hates cuddling.
But Gabe put him in our Sunday update as a dog that's looking for a forever home. I told you have a story that you wanted to know. Okay.
Rehoming my dog.
So, people, if you get our Sunday update and you see this older Dachshund that's described as being playful.
No, you cannot have him.
He hates skunks and squirrels. He's been neutered. He is not a dog to be adopted. Our newsletter person misunderstood and thought this was a dog that we...
How many inquiries have we had?
37.
Are you serious?
So you can't have our security dog. Tucker is totally fine. He was not supposed to go in the Sunday update as...
I have phone calls to make.
He was not supposed to go in there as like he's living in an animal shelter. Now, Tucker loves the idea of a bunch of people wanting to give him treats.
No, he wants pets.
And pets.
He wants pets.
But he is not for adoption.
Children.
I'm sorry that our intern messed that up. I haven't had a chance to explain that to Paige. So I thought doing the microphone was the right way to do it. Weekly rig count. Where are we?
Hang on. Give me a moment. Let me collect myself. I'm over here trying not to have a coronary. So it's not looking great. We're down 7 in the United States at 622, down 6 in Canada at 225, down 7 internationally at 958. I can't believe he tried to give away my dog.
Well, we're at a conference. For all you know, Tucker's getting treats and pets by a bunch of strangers back at OGN's corporate headquarters.
Bro.
Because they're showing up. And you know how he'll get in other people's cars without asking.
That has happened so many times.
So anyway, our security dog's just fine. People, don't worry. It's just, it's a funny mix-up. What's not a funny mix-up is our merch store. Actually, Paige and I are both sporting OGGN merch today. If you would like to be like Paige and I and wear OGGN merch, go hit the store.
If someone tries to give away your dog.
And then if you want myself or your experts to come to speak, my keynotes this year are for some reason exploding. I got about 7 or 8 that I'm doing already. So if you want to get on my calendar, let me know now because this is just March and this has been unseasonably busy for me for speaking, but would love to come help. Also, if you're doing something that's fun, like a cocktail event or something for your customers, let us know. And we'd be happy to bring a podcast there live for entertainment. People love that. First Friday Q&A, you know the drill. You ask a question. If we use your question on there, you get a big shout out. You ready to get out of here?
I'm reading the Sunday update.
Remember, folks, do great work, pay it forward, and we will see you next time.
Tune in next week for another informative and entertaining episode of Oil and Gas This Week podcast, a production of the Oil and Gas Global Network. Learn more at oggn.com.